So yesterday we spoke a little about Nedarim, and there were two types of Nedarim that the Mishnah compared one to the other. One was the classical Mudar Hanam Mechavero, and the other was Mudar Mimenu Machal. And the Mishnah says that there are two Nafkiminas. One Nafkimin is with regard to Drisas Regel, and the other nafkamin is with regard to kelim shein osim bem ochol nefesh. Both of them are lekula in the case of mudar machol, and lechum in the case of mudar mimenu hana. Now, what I didn't know yesterday was that the Gemara in Nedarim on Daf Lamed Gimel says that we're talking about a neder when we speak about mudar mimenu machol. He took a neder. Shalolehenos mimenu bahano hamiviol idei machol, and that's why he's not allowed to enjoy from his friend kelim shaosim behem machol, because his neder was hano hamiviol idei machol. But the Gemara establishes that if, on the other hand, he took a neder hanos machol, not hano hamiviol idei machol, then he's not going to be usur in any hanah that he gets that could bring to machol, but only in achila atzma. So here are the two cases. One case is Reuven turns to Shimon and he says, "Ani mudar mimcha b'chol hanah shemeviel idei machol." And the other case is where Reuven turns to Shimon and he says, "Ani mudar hanah hanos machol." In the latter case, he's only asur in achila. In other words, Reuven could not be a guest in Shimon's house, and Shimon feeds him. But in the first case, where he says hano mevil de machol, that's the subject of our Mishnah. And then Reuven is not allowed to take from Shimon kelim that are used for food, because that's already hano mevil de machol. That's called kelim she'osim bem ochel nefesh. That's point number one.
There's a Yerushalmi here that Steintel says, Yerushalmi, which says you have to distinguish between kelim she'osim bem acholim kigo nofa gvora u'sha'ar makshir na'achonas ha'ochel she'im asurim demudo anaz achila. In kelim she'in she'behem rak v'minichim v'hem esam machalim kigon kosos u'tzlochos she'in mutarim. So different.
So Yishalmi says that osav en ochel nefesh means they prepare the food, not that you eat the food.
That's right.
Okay, that's not the impression I got here from the Bavli, but that's Yishalmi.
Well, that's Yishalmi, right.
Okay, now we have another important point here. The Mishnah says that the nafkamina between mudar mimenu machol and mudar hanah is drisas regel. So here we have a tosus, dibra maskel drisas regel, and in this tosus, towards the end of tosus, he quotes Rabbeinu Tam. Mm-hmm. And Rabbeinu Tam's shita is that drisas regel is a reference dafka to bik'a. She'ein derech b'nei odom lahakpid al drisas regel, as opposed to a chotzer. She'derech b'nei odom lahakpid al drisas regel. So if I allow you to go through my chotzer, which is simply my private yard in front of my house, that already requires a full-fledged gift. You know, I'm giving you a hanah, because most people would be makpid on that. But the case in our Mishnah, where in the case of mudar mimenu hanah, he would be mutar in, let's say, drisas regel. Well, again, that depends upon Rabbi Eliezer and Chachamim. Let's say, if you all like the Chachamim, who hold that vitur is not considered hanah, then drisas regel will be mutter even in mudar hanah. That's not our Mishnah, because Rav is going to tell us that our Mishnah is attributed to Rabbi Eliezer. But according to the Chachamim, Rabbi Tam says you could be matir in mudra noa drisas regal dafkan a bika. A bika is a larger like shetach, you know, an area of you know, down in the valleys, you know, where people just go in and out, and even if he technically owns the land, he's not makpid people go there. And that's called vitur, which according to the Chachom is mutter in mudar hanah. But in the case of chotzer, that's derech b'nei olam lahakpid, then even the Chachom would agree that's also in mudar hanah drisus regel. That's point number one. Now, in terms of the case of Hanah HaMevili Be'machol, so we pointed out yesterday that that's Asur if it's a Hanah that's worth a Shavu Pruta, because then he can take the Shavu Pruta and he can buy food. Whereas Drisus Regel is not considered Shavu Pruta. So I have here a whole discussion based on a Turi Evan of the Shagas Aryeh about what's the status in the case of a Hanah that's Pachos Mishava Pruta. And Rashi quotes a Mishnah in the Darm Daf Lamed Gimel that Af Kalim Shein Osim Ben Ochol Nefesh Im derech laskiram bi oso makom osu lemuder machal. That this whole heter about kelim she'ein osim bem ochel nefesh is only because the use of these kelim is not worth a pruta, because they're not osim, they're not derech lahaskir in that makom. However, if it would be derech lahaskir, then that hanah could be converted into monetary terms. And that's considered a hanah mevili de machal, because he could take that money and he could buy machal. And Rashi mentions that we're talking about a schirus of kelim, which is shavu pruta. Tosus also, this Dibra Masel El on the top of Daf Chesam and Aleph, agrees with Rashi that we need a hanah shavu l'chol hashavu pruta, and therefore kelim. Kalim Shein Osim Bem Ochel Nefesh, if they're Omdim Lahaskir, and that's a Shava Pruta's worth of Anah, that would be Asur even in the case of Machel, of Mudur Machel. If you have Kalim Shein Osim Bem Ochel Nefesh, that's Asur even if it's not worth the Anah of Shava Pruta, because that's Mamish Ochel Nefesh. Again, whether it's the Napa or the coast, that's the Yushalmi business. But now he quotes the Turi Evan, and he asks the following question: the Turi Evan, if you're talking about the Noder and what his das was, if we analyze his mindset, that ein das ha Noder lesser ha nosh ein vashav pruta, that he, when he took the neder, he never had in mind ha no which is worth less than a shav pruta. He says then yesh lahatir af lishol kelim shaosim emochol nefesh. In other words, if he's not interested in Pachus Mishav Pruta, in the mind of the Noda, that's not worth anything. That's like a feather that you wouldn't even bother picking up from the floor. So in such a case, even if it's a Keli Sha'osim Ben Mochel Nefesh, what difference does it make? It's worth less than a Shav Pruta, because the Noda only took upon himself an Iser of a Shav Pruta, but not Pachus Mishav Pruta. So why not apply that principle even to Ochel Nefesh? That's the Turi Evan's question. And therefore he comes to the conclusion of the Turi Evan against Tosus that the Kavanah of the Noder is to even prohibit himself lesser Pachos Mishava Pruta. And that's why Kalim Shosabel Ochel Nefesh is Asur, even if it's Pachos Mishava Pruta. The Asur Lishol Kalim Shaderech Laskiram Afim Askirus Eina Shava Pruta. So if you have kelim that are usually borrowed or usually rented, and people would pay money for them, that's called hanah hamevil lidei machol, even if the rental fee would be less than a shava pruta, because it's darkom lahaskir. And keep in mind, the noder has in mind to accept upon himself a neder, even if it's pachos mishava bruta. Now, we said that according to Rabbi Eliezer, vitur is aser b'mudr hana. Okay, so for example, if I as a mocher normally give you a little extra fruit, then you're not allowed to receive that from me in the case of mudr hana, even though it's only vitur. In other words, it's accepted process. Accepted, it's an accepted sale. In other words, a minug in sales that we add a little bit extra, you know, for full incentive. So in Bava Basra, there's a Rashbam that says the following: Mikevon she'eino de makad al mido bechatzero. If you assume that I wouldn't mind if you stood in my chatzer. We were talking about Jesus Regal where he goes through the chatzer. Hareu ke mafkir oso le'inyan amida. It's as if the owner of the chatzer made his chatzer hefker in a relative way, specifically for amida. And in such a case, there's no neder, because when I take a neder not to benefit from you, I mean from something that you own. Now, according to Rabbi Eliezer, who holds a vitur is asur, there's a machlokas whether that's an isud Torah or only an isud Rabbanon. The Ramban says that vitur asur is only mid Rabbanon, and therefore the Gemara in Nedarim paskins that shutvim shenodru hana zemizeh mutarim l'shtamish bechotzer hamishutefes she'ein derech hashutvim lahakpid zel zeh. Says the Ramban that since midraisa lo chaleim klali search tamshis bechotzer, and the whole thing is an isid rabbanon. So in the case of a drabbanon, we're going to rely on what's called brera. What's brera in the case of shutvim? That we declare that b'shosha kol shutav mishtamish, whenever each one of the shutvim gets his turn to use the object that's owned in partnership, is brera says b'chelko mishtamish. Right? It's like an Igloi Milsom Afred, that was designated for him as his ownership. He has private ownership. But in any event, other Rishonim assume that Vitur, according to Rabbi Eliezer, is Osir Mudra Na Midoraisa. And he has a whole piece here in the name of the Karen Orin in Dorim to prove that the Rambam holds that Vitur is Osir Midoraisa. Okay, let's just see.
We follow Rabbi Eliezer or we don't?
Say it again?
We follow Rabbi Eliezer, except him?
It seems that we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. That's the impression I get, because our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. So it's a Stam Mishnah ki Rabbi Eliezer. That's the impression I get. We'd really have to open up the Rama Mehilchus Nedarim to be absolutely sure. But that's the impression I get over here, because the Rambam seems to say that Vitur is also in a Torah,
yeah.
Whereas according to the Chachamim, Vitur is Mutter in Mudr Anah. So we must be accepting. Now the Rambam has a case of a Safek, but we're not sure if it's Vitur or not Vitur. And the Rambam says in this case we have to go L'chumra. So the Karen Or says why, and the Rambam says Safek Asur V'yeng Lokin Olav. Right, it seems that it's definitely Asur even though there's no Malkus. So let's say you're out of Halicha Derech Reshuso, you know, of Jesus Regal, and you weren't sure whether or not it was Vitur or not Vitur. So we could apply the principle of Safek Doraisa L'chumra, because Vitur is also Koin Tarvi Eliezer B'Doraisa. Now again, as we said before, this is all relative to the place and the time. If you have a place where people are not makpid on Drisas or Rego, then, for example, Chatzah Shutfin, the example we gave before, then that comes on the Vitor, which according to the Chacham is Mutter, according to Rabbi Eliezer is Asur. So it's a relative theory. But the basic principle here in this whole sugya at least according to Chacham and Rabbi Eliezer, is that a hana is not considered a hana. We don't recognize that a hana is if he got benefit from his friend, if b'nei adam lo makpibim aleha. People are not makpid on that. Now, it's interesting because there's a whole discussion in the Achronim about what implications this sugya has elsewhere in other Yisurim, not in the Darim. Like, for example, you're not allowed to benefit from an Asherah, from a tree that was worshipped as Avodah Zarah. Right, so what would be, in a case of Vitur, would you be allowed, according to the Chacham at least, to enjoy that benefit from an Asherah because ein derech b'nei adam lahakpid aleha? Like, let's say, for example, you enjoy the shade of the Asherah. I'm just giving a possible example. You know, can I sit in the shade of an Asherah tree? And it seems that at least the Ran in the Darim learns that our whole sugi is dealing with Hana. How do we define Hana? And if it's ein derech b'nei adam lahakpid, that's not, the Torah doesn't recognize that as Hana, and that has implications as far as Avodah Zarah is concerned. But the Tari Evan learns that no, this din is only in the Darim. It's a separate din in the Darim. And he says that in the Darim there's a separate halacha of holchim achar loshem b'nei adam v'kavanosam, and the Rabbanan hold that the person is not miskavi when he takes a neder for a hana that most people are mevater on. You know, they give it to you gratis. They let you go through their field or whatever it might be. So that's a special halacha in das nedarim because, you know, we need what's called in the Darim piv libo shavin. Everything depends on what he had in mind at the time that he took the neder. So it could be in kol atar kula this hana of vitur, even according to Chachamim, does qualify as hana. So just to fill you in, Eric, we're talking about a case of an avodah zarah, an asherah, and are you allowed to sit under the asherah and enjoy this the shade of the asherah on a hot sunny day? Hard for us to imagine that today, but if you could,
that's the day was nice,
right? So the Ran in the Darim says that our sugya is dealing with the universal definition of what's hana, and the Chachamim and the Rabbi Lezer are arguing about a case of vitur where nobody would be makpid. And in the case of shade, I wouldn't be makpid if you enjoyed the shade of my tree. You know, you're not taking away from my tree. If we work with that premise that ain't on the makpid I'll tzel, then if we assume that our sugya according to Chachamim is denying the status of hana to something that ain't b'nei adam makpid al tzel, that since no one cares about it, therefore it's not hana, then it would be mutter in asherah. So that's the Ran in the Darim. But the Tari Evan, the Shagasari here in Masechta Megillah, proves from other Rishonim that disagree, and they hold that this is a separate din in the Darim. And in the Darim, we have to go into the Das b'nei adam. It depends on what he had in mind. So he had in mind to prohibit himself in something that's a significant hana that most people would not normally give you, and he's giving you that hana. I prohibit myself from that hana. But vitur, according to the Chachamim, is not considered hana for nedarim because it das noded. But as far as kol atarkuya, universal definition, meheches basis, you know,
it's a benefit for. They're essentially holding.
So now, let's say the voters owned the field, right? Let's say the church owns a field. Am I allowed to go through that field to get to the shortest, you know, through the shortest distance? So we might say that in Nedarim, I never took a neder on Drisus Rego because, you know, derech b'nei adam lo lahakpi. But as far as Hano is concerned, I did get Hano from you. Right. But that's not the Hano that I had in mind in Nedarim. That's the Turiyev. And the Ran seems to say that Al Gemara is operating with the universal question about what constitutes hana. Does the Torah recognize a hana when ein derech b'nei adam lahakpid aleha as a hana, and that would have repercussions in Avodah Zarah or other Yisurim. Now this concept that a neder depends upon what you have in mind, that might also have an impact on the issue of pachos mishomer pruta. Let's say I take a neder not to benefit from you, and you give me a hana of pachos mishomer pruta. Let's say you give me a kli gratis that I can use it when you could rent it out, but the rental fee for that kli would be less than a shomer pruta. If you envision such a case, right? Let's say, for example, they would, you know, I would charge you rental for 5 kelim, 1 pruta. So each kli is only worth a fifth of a pruta. So if you're going into Das B'nai Adam, then you may have a room to argue. Again, everything is iffy, but you could possibly argue that his Das B'nai Adam was for something significant, like a pruta's worth, but less than a pruta would not constitute his mindset, you know, when he took upon himself the med. And in fact, there's a whole discussion here in the Turi Evan and the Shagasariyeh about whether or not a person has in mind an isur of hanah when it's less than a shava pruta. And the Turi Evan accuses Tosus as holding that the person never had in mind less than a shava pruta. And the Turi Evan goes ballistic on that. He says, no, he has in mind all hanah. He doesn't care whether it's... Because Tosus comes to the conclusion that even in the case of mudr machol, if I give you a kli and you're going to eat from that kli, if the eating from the kli is less than the shava pruta, it's not osur hanah. And the Shagasari says, no, he prohibited on himself any machol, any hanah sachila. And this is hanah sachila. He's using Yenim's plate, you know, his bowl, in order to eat his cereal. So that's called hanah sachila. But Tosfos say, well, that hanah is less than the shava pruta. And the Turi Evan can't understand that at all, because the man said, I don't want to have hanah sachila from you. Did he mean dafka shava pruta? Is that what he had in mind?
Well, the Mishnah would seem to support the Turi Evan, because the Mishnah is saying... So that means that kelim that are ochel nefesh, like a plate, where eating from it once would be worse than less right. than food, that seems to be prohibited.
Right, the Turi Evan is talking according to the Chachamim. Amish is going according to Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer holds that Vitor is also b'mudrano. But we paskin.
Even he seems to be holding that less than a shava pruta still counts, because he's saying kelim that are
right, because he holds that there's a din of hanah. You know, that's if I'm excuse me, sorry, if I get any benefit from you whatsoever, even though ain derech b'nei odom lahakti. The Chachamim say if ain derech b'nei odom lahakti, then that's not called hanah in the Dorot.
Ah, okay. So then
comes along the Turi Evan and he says, wait a minute, how can you say that when the man said hanah sachila and you're giving him hanah sachila? So who cares if ain b'nei odom makt? So Tosa understood that kaila depends upon shavpruta lo shavpruta, and that's the mindset of the Dorot.
This would be a different Mishnah if it were the
Chachon.
John and I
were discussing whether we pass like Rabbi Eliezer, and it would seem that halacha kistam Mishnah. And the Rambam goes as far as to say that if you have a case that's suffek, then you have to go l'chumra because of Rabbi Eliezer's shita. Okay, so today we want to start the second Mishnah, Daf Ches Amud Aleph. And this is a question of Nidorim and Nidovos. So we're now entering into the world of Kodshim, of Hegdesh. And there are two possibilities of a self-accepted pledge to bring kodshim. One is called harei alai, and one is called harei zu. So harei alai is called a neder, that's the technical term for it, and harei zu is called an idava. What's the difference between the two? That's the subject of our Mishnah. In the case of a neder, a person takes upon himself a commitment to bring a karmon. Oh, Moshe, how are you? Now, you know, in the world of karbonos, there are very, very rare occasions or categories of karbonos that you can self-accept as a voluntary obligation. So, for example, a chatos or an asham is eino babinizdav. You know, you can't just voluntarily bring a karbon, or you can't even bring a karbon toda. Almost every karbon, I'm going to mention the exception in just a minute, requires a mechayev. In other words, there's no such thing as nedava. The exception to the rule, the classical exception to the rule, is a karbon ola. A karbon ola is something that you can self-accept and commit yourself to bring a karbon ola through the parasha of nedarim. Now, if you're operating with the parasha of nedarim in the case of ola, that's called harei alai. I take upon myself that I will bring a karbon ola. And the next discussion we're going to have later on is, when will we bring the karbon ola? Can he bring it, you know, when Mashiach comes, or does he have to bring it within a certain period of time? But we're not up to that yet. Now, when a person says harei alai, those magical words, harei alai ola, and he voluntarily takes upon himself a commitment to bring an ola, he's not referring to any specific animal. He's not pointing at Elsie the cow and saying, I will bring Elsie as a carbonola. He's saying, I will bring a carbonola. And he's got to bring a carbonola. If he goes ahead and then he designates a certain animal as a carbon for his nether, and that animal gets lost or stolen or dies, he's got to replace it with another animal, because he took upon himself, in the fancy jargon of the yeshiva veld, that's called a chovas gavra. He took upon himself a chovas gavra. Forget about the animal. I'll find the animal. If this animal doesn't last long enough, I'll have to find another animal. I took upon myself an absolute commitment, tarei olai, to bring a carbon. Then there's another possibility, and that's called a nedava. Nedava works specifically through the laws of kodshim. It's not a neder at all. Nedava means I point my finger to an animal and I say, harei zu ola, this animal is an ola. And in that case, I never accepted upon myself a commitment. I just have to bring this animal insofar as I was magdish the animal as an ola. So in the case of the Dava, where I said I raised zoo, if that animal drops dead, unfortunately, then that's it. I can't bring it in the base on Mikdash. I don't have to bring a substitute for it. So that's what that Mishnah says. Ein bein nedarim l'nedavos elisha nedarim chayav bachar yusan v'nedavos eino chayav bachar yusan. In the case of a neder, when you say a real lie, you have a chrayus. A chrayus means you're responsible. You have to back it up. If this animal doesn't work, then you're going to have to bring a different animal. That's called a chrayus. In the case of a dova, where a person says, behema zoo, ola, and he points to an animal, if the animal dies or gets stolen or gets lost, eino chayav bachrayus, and he doesn't have to replace it with another animal. Why? Because the nature of his commitment was to bring this specific animal. He didn't take upon himself a chovas gavra to bring an ola, but he designated this particular animal as an adama. And all of his commitment, it lies and is limited to this particular animal. So far so good, Rabosai? Okay. Now the Gemara wants to know the following. This is the style of all the sugyas of Ein Bein. If you pinpoint one contrast, one difference, it means that vis-a-vis other issues, there is no difference. Do you remember that? Like we said before, on Daf Zayin Amid Beis, we spoke about that there's no difference between Yontif and Shabbos, except for Ochol Nefesh. What about Machshir Ochol Nefesh? So we assume that the Mishnah would go according to Rav Yehudu, who says that even Machshir Ochol Nefesh is also on Yontif. So the only difference between the two is Ochol Nefesh. Here also, the Gemara is going to go with the same methodology. If you're reducing the conscious, the difference between Neder and Adav Tachrayus, then Ha Le'inyon Balti Acher Zemezesh Shavin. We have to assume there's a common denominator with regard to Balti Acher. So let's say a few words about Balti Acher. The Torah says that when you have a commitment to bring a carbon, how long of a time period do we allow you? What's the allotment period? It's only up to 3 regalim. So let's say, for example, today I would say, Harei Olai. And the Gemara is now being medayik, even if I would say, Harei Zu, and I point to a specific animal. We get to Pesach, that's one moed. We get to Shavuos, that's another moed. We get to Sukkos, that's a third moed. If I don't fulfill my neder, or for that matter, my nedava, by Sukkos, then I'm a violation of the law of Balti Acher. Would I get Malkus for that, by the way?
No.
Right, it's a Lav Shem B'Maisa. There's no law.
Could you make it part of your Harei Olai and then say that I'll bring it within 5 years?
I think you can, if I'm not mistaken. At least in the case of a neder. I'm not sure about nedava. Now, Rashi has a whole discussion here. If you take a look, Holin and Balti Acher, it's very nice that the Gemara was medayik this in the Mishnah, but let's go back to the Torah itself. The Torah actually only writes Balti Acher in the parasha of Neder. We don't find Balti Acher in the parasha of Nedarim. There are two sections in the Torah, in two different chumashim, as a matter of fact. One is dedicated to Nedarim, the other to Nedavis, and the parasha of Balti Acher only appears in Nedarim. You took upon yourself a chovas gavra, an absolute commitment to bring a neder, to bring an ola. How much time do we give you? Up to 3 regalim. But in the case of nedava, how do you know that there's Balti Acher? Again, we know it from the Mishnah, but how did the Mishnah know it? So Rashi says, V'afal gav, di nedava b'kra di Balti Acher lo ksiva. Even though If you look in the parasha of Bal Tiacher, you'll see absolutely no mention of what? Of Nedava. That parasha is totally exclusively dedicated to Neder. So Rashi quotes a Gemara in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, and the Gemara invokes what Rashi calls a Gzera Shava. Now I have a problem here, because if you go through the Gemara Rosh Hashanah Daf Hei Amud Beis, you don't get the impression that it's a Gzera Shava. Let me read to you the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Hei Amud Beis. He quotes it here in the Banam. The Gemara has a drasha that in the parasha of Nedarim, which opens up with the words Ki Tidar Neder, there it says Bal Tiachel L'Shalmo. You have to bring it within a certain period of time. So the Gemara says the following: Ein li ela neder, nedava minayin. We only know about a neder. How do we know about nedava? And the Gemara says Nemar kan neder, v'nemar lehalon. Later on in Sefer Dvarim it says im neder o nedava. And now the Gemara has a hekesh between neder and nedava, because in the parasha nedava the Torah calls it neder o nedava. And the Gemara says that just like in the case of neder, you have a violation of Bal Tiachir if you delay, so too in the case of nedava, you have a violation of Bal Tiachir if you delay. So Rashi calls this a gzeirah shava. In other words, Rashi is saying that we take the word neder from the parsha of nedava, we compare it to the word neder in the parsha of Bal Tiacher, in the pure Nedarim parsha, and neder is Gzeres Shalma. The simple pshat in the Gemara, again, we were not learning Rosh Hashanah, so I'm not committed to go through this, but it seems like the Gemara is making a hekesh between neder and nedava, because it says, im neder o nedava. And then we're going to say, ma neder yesh pa Bal Tiacher, so to nedava is Bal Tiacher. In any event, the Rambam, in his Pirush HaMishnayos, in this Mishnah, has a pretty interesting innovation over here. And the Rambam says that the reason why there's Bal Tiachir Nedava is because Nedava has not just a lav, if you violate your Nedava, but there's also an essay called Motzayas Vasecha Tishmar. And in that parsha of Motzos Vasecha Tishmar, which is the positive command to fulfill your lip service, your vocal, your verbal commitment, the Torah says, Kasher Nadarta Lashem Elokecha Nedava. So in the parsha of Motzos Vasecha Tishmar, the Torah goes out of its way to add the word Nedava. And the Rambam assumes that the word nedava here should be taken literally as a nedava, meaning where he says, "Arei zu." And since Motzos Vasecha Tishmar generates an essay, when we go back to the original parasha Bal Tiacher, the Torah gives you two parts, two flip sides of the coin. One is the lav of Bal Tiacher, and the flip side of that in the same parasha is Motzos Vasecha Tishmar. So it's very interesting that the Rambam seems to be totally oblivious to the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, which, as Rashi says, derives the Isur Lav Bal Tiachir Nedava from a Gzeres Shava, and the Rambam sees it in the pasuk Motzos Vasecha Tishmar, which ends with the word Nedava. It's very interesting, you know, how the Rambam comes up with his own Yalfus, his own derivation. I'm just pointing that out to you.
Well, he may be more focused on adding the Mitzvah Saseh, so therefore we look to that, because the Rosh Hashanah didn't discuss that.
Right. Right, but the Rambam here is trying to address the question: how does our Mishnah know, based on the Sugya Sagamara, that there's an Isur Bal Tiachir Nedava? And the Rambam says they derive from that mitzvah, which ends with the word Nedava. Okay, we don't have to get into that. I just wanted to mention that sometimes you find amazing chidushim in the Rambam Pirush HaMishnayos. You know, there are those who, by the way, methodologically, whenever they learn a Mishnah, automatically they read the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos. It's a training, you know. We're not trained in that way. We should train ourselves in that way, because there are unbelievable chidushim in the Rambam Pirush HaMishnayos. Which, by the way, in what language does the Rambam write his Pirush HaMishnayos? Do you know?
Arabic, right?
In Hebrew, Arabic. No, it's Arabic with Hebrew letters. I actually saw it with my own eyes. They had it on exhibit. The family of the Rambam actually has the Rambam's writings, and they had an exhibit, the Rambam's Pirush HaMishnayos. It was absolutely stunning because the Rambam wrote it looks like a Sefer Torah. And I saw in one particular column he had to cross something out. It's unbelievable. He has a cross out right in the middle of the letters. He was a real Yekki, the Rambam. Yeah. And the comments of his son, Rabbeinu Avram, are all around the Gilead in handwritten. It's very exciting to see something like that.
Where is this located? Where is this on this?
That was at the National Library. They had it on exhibit. This is a mice of probably 10 years ago.
Right. And the family of the Rambam, do you know who they are?
Yeah. They have a lot of stuff. You know, it's invaluable. Can you imagine if that went on auction? You know, how much you'd pay for the Rambam's own writings? You know, they also had a Sefer Torah on exhibit that was written by the Ran. All right. In any event, Tanan Hasam. Yeah. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. This just makes more. It actually makes more sense that Baal Tachat makes more sense with Nedava than it does with Nedava, because with Nedava, you don't have a responsibility to replace it. So if you let it sit there for a few years,
maybe it'll die.
Right.
Tanan Hasam, we learned in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Ezu Neder. What is Neder? HaOmer, he says, Hare Olai Ola. Now again, this is not for us now, but if we were learning Kodshim, we'd have to study Shlomim, whether or not Shlomim is Bav and Nedava. Alright, Ezi Nedava HaOmer Hare Zu Ola. Umabe Nidarim Linidavos Nidarim Mesu O Nignivu O Avdu Chayav Bachriusam Nidavos Mesu O Nignivu O Avdu Eno Chayav Bachriusam. I'll tell you, Rabbi, so what bothers me a little bit here, it's not a big kasha, but if you would have asked me for the classical case, again, only because I have a very limited familiarity with kodshim, but the classical case of an animal that can't be brought on the mizbeach is either nafal bo mum, nafal bo mum or nitma, or it became tamid, because both of those are possible in mizbeach. So I don't know why the Gemara says it got lost, it died, it got stolen. These are like unusual cases.
Unless those are the halachas of these situations.
No, but the question is
I'm just saying, classically, again, I'm only saying this because I'm a little familiar with Kodshim. In Kodshim, whenever the Gemara wants to give you an example of an animal that's gone, you know, it's originally it was sanctified for the Mizbeach, but then it lost its possibility and its candidacy for Mizbeach, it's always either Nafal Bamum or Nitma. No, like that's classic.
Yeah.
I don't know why in this case the Gemara is giving this
that's about the korban. This is about the person.
No, he's talking about the behemoth. He's talking about the animal, right? Does he have to replace an animal that died? So in the case of the dava, finito. The parish is over.
Maybe. Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
In these three cases, you have no. There's nothing left of the animal. It's mesu nignivu bo'avdu. But if you still have the animal becomes tamek. That doesn't mean if the animal's worth, instead of $200, it's worth $100. Maybe you still owe that $100 to the base of
Well, it can't be tamek until it's mesu, right?
One second. Aren't we talking about the
Okay. You said harizu. Okay. So this behemoth is a $200 bessie. Right. If it's mace, runav or avdu, I don't have any possibility. Yeah. But if it becomes mum or something, it still has a value. And maybe I'm mechuyah for that value to the base of mikvah.
But what they're really actually saying, they are not there. There's a factor of they are not there. I still have a. It looks okay, but it's tummy.
Can you sell the animal?
No.
Well, if you doesn't right, but if it's a lie, then it doesn't matter which animal you bring, right?
Right. Doesn't matter.
He's lost it.
As long as at the end of the day, before the three were going past, you bring the animal.
Right. Now, what happens if there's a problem? Tameh is only after Shechita, right? I mean, a live animal can't become Tameh.
Yeah.
How does a live animal become Tameh?
I don't know.
I don't think a live animal can become Tameh. I think only after Shechita can become Tameh.
All right, boss, I'm sorry. I kind of regret that I mentioned this.
I'm wondering.
Let's just get to the finish line.
Okay,
all right. So the Gemara says, Minani Mili. How do we know? Now here is my focus, how to interpret Minani Mili. One way of learning it is, how do we know that in the case of a neder, Yochai Bachar Yusom? The other way of learning this is, how do we know that only in the case of neder, Yochai Bachar Yusom, as opposed to a nedava where you're not Chai Bachrites? Now the Gemara is going to bring a limud to drasha to learn that in neder you chayv bachrayis. But again, there are going to be two ways in the mefarshim how to learn this. One approach is going to be the Gemara is answering its question: how do we know that in neder is chayv bachrayis? The other way is going to say: how do you know that we knew that in neder is chayv bachrayis? He said a real lie, so he never pointed to a specific animal. He has a commitment, but we need to know that when in the parsha bachrayis we're only talking about neder as opposed to nedava. And according to that approach, there was a serious havamina that even in the case of nedava, he'd be chayv bachrayis. And maybe that would be Osher's point, that maybe in a nedava, according to this havamina at least, you know, it's not this animal that I'm designating. I'm only designating this animal in terms of its value, so to speak, its abstract value. Toner Rabbanon, we have a b'risa, b'mirtzo lo l'chapar olav, which I think is at the beginning of a yikra. Let me just look in the Torah. Or, yeah. It's mamish at the very beginning of Sefer Vayikra, and the Gemara is going to darshan here the word olav, and not necessarily because the word usually a drush on a word when the Gemara Chazal focus on one word, it's because that word is superfluous. I don't think that that's this case. I don't think we're talking about the extra word. It doesn't mean just drop the word olav. But rather, we're going to analyze the word olav and see what the meaning of olav is. So, Rav Shimon Omer, what does the word olav mean? Now, v'mirtzalo means that he can achieve a kapara, and he's achieving a kapara. Every karmon is the goal, or the agenda, or the achievement of every karmon is kapara, and the Mishnah is saying that in. I'm sorry, the Pasuk is saying that in what context is there going to be a karbon that's machaper? In this particular context, it's going to be olav. That's the nature of this karbon. It's a karbon of olav. And what does olav mean, says Rav Shimon? Es sha'olav chayev bachrayus. Ve'she'eno olav. Eino chayev bachrayis. Again, I'm not sure if the emphasis is on the ratio of the sefer, but in any event, olav means, you know, if you take the vav of olav and you drop it for a second, you're left with the word olai. So olav, according to Rav Shimon, means olai, and hare olai means that you're chayev because it's olai. Now, what exactly is the Gemara deriving here? If the Gemara wants to tell you that you're chayev bachrayus, so it's a little bit odd because the word olav means that he will achieve a kapara. It doesn't necessarily mean that his neder was hare olav. And maybe that's what the Gemara is implying here in its next question. My mashma. In other words, how do you know that the word olav implies that it was hare olav? And even more than that, even if I grant you that olav means it was hare olav, why does hare olai indicate, meaning if the Torah is saying that this karbon is olai, how does that indicate achrayus? Omer Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi, kevan di omer olai, kiman di toina katvei domi. Let's explain. Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi is giving us a mashal, almost an idiomatic phrase. If you want to indicate and express that you are responsible for something, you say, quote, it's on my shoulders. You know, it's like, for example, the Levim, you know, some mishpachos Levim were in charge of carrying the Aron, right? So that means they have responsibility to make sure the Aron doesn't fall off, right? That's, I carry it on my shoulders. If I carry it on my shoulders, it means it's heavy on me. It's a heavy responsibility on my shoulders, and I'm going to make sure it doesn't get lost and so forth and so on.
It's like homework.
Yeah?
It's like homework.
Yeah. I see you're raising kids. I can tell, you know, homework, that's a dirty word. Homework.
grade 11 Jewish history teacher here. I don't run home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I never did it, but that's okay.
That's fine.
Okay. I think we should change this grade retroactively. You got to go back to high school.
Bring it on. Love it. Go back. I'm there. I'm
to
there
high school.
Oh, what are you talking about? All my teachers are in this neighborhood here.
Right. Okay. So let's just try to get a little of a flavor here. I was very disappointed in the in the footnotes here because he doesn't really give you a grasp on the shakel d'aria back and forth. What was the Gemara asking my mashma, and what did Rabbi Yitzchok come up with? So I'm suggesting the following possibility. That even if I grant you, says the Gemara, that the word olav is indicative of olai, of hare olai, but why is the word olai, even if I grant you that that's what's written in the pasuk, how does that indicate achrayus? You know, you want to tell me that because he said hare olai, he's chayav achrayus. So Rabbi Yitzchok wants to give us a deeper insight into the word olai. And the word olai means it's like a weight, a burden on my shoulders. And when you say about something that it's on my shoulders, it's olai, what you're saying is that I'm going to make sure that this is delivered to its proper address, and it will, you know, if it gets lost or whatever, I will replace.
Question, the quote here, I mean, the Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi makes sense to me, but the little before with the quote.
Rav Shimon?
Rav Shimon, where it says, Nirsal lo lechaper olav. Doesn't that apply to any olav? So it could be in the Dava as well, isn't it?
Oh, so now that Rav Dimi is telling you that the word olav indicates it's a responsibility of olav, then the Torah is basically saying only in this case is it a responsibility because he said a real lot. So do you follow this A plus B? A is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is saying that the word olav should be sort of truncated and drop the last letter and analyze the first three letters. And if you focus on that, you have olai, which means that he declared hare olai. That's not enough. The Gemara says, okay, so he declared hare olai. But why does that indicate achrayus? And that's where we have A plus B. B is Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Avdimi, that the word olai means, and I'm taking it upon myself, it's a self-accepted commitment that this will be fulfilled.
I get that. I mean, I get that's what I mean. I understand that second part, but I'm not sure how you get to the first part, because the first part is relying on a pasuk that is referring to both Nedarim and...
That's before Reb Shimon. You know, Reb Shimon is telling you that the word olav is referring specifically to hare olai.
But how could it, I guess what I'm wondering is, how could it be doing that if this is a pasuk that's for any ola and therefore refers to...
So that's exactly where Rabbi Yitzchok is filling in, that the Torah wanted to give you an idea that goes beyond kapara. Meaning, it's a kapara, and that could be universal for any kind of carbon, but what's unique about this particular olav carbon is that it's toyen akatve, that he takes it upon himself as a commitment to bring this kapara, to bring this carbon. Okay, Rabbi Moshe, now we get to a Mishnah. And Moshe, you weren't here yesterday. I'll just clue you in. I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but we want to know where we go from here. So again,
where was
decided? I'm not making any decision. If you want, I can give you a number of possible choices, one of which would be that we continue in Masechta Megillah. Again, I'm going to lose a lot of night's sleep here because we're getting to two black Gemara that are extremely difficult. Extremely difficult because you have to be so oriented in different areas of Shas. And not only that, I'll tell you another thing why I'm a bit... Again, I'm not posketing here. I'm just inclined to maybe throw out some new options. Is because this sugya that of the Ein Veins ends on Daf Yud. And guess what? You think that when you get back to Daf Yud, we're going to have some nice, juicy, lumdish sugyas in Megillah? Forget it. From Daf Yud till Daf Yud Zayin, which is the second perek, it's all Agadita. Now again, I don't mind learning Agadita, but keep in mind, it's going to be weeks and weeks and weeks that we're going to be learning Agadita without any halacha whatsoever. And you know, when we finish on Daf Yud Zayin, each of every one of us will be a baki in Megillas Esther, al pi Chazal, which is great. I mean, that, you know, there's so many drushes. I'll tell you, you'll have enough material for Yesudas Purim, for Divrei Torah, for the next 50 years. So that's in favor.
Well, then I'm good.
Yeah. Then you get to the second perek, by the way. And the second perek has a little bit of Purim in it. Uh-huh. And basically, it's mostly about Kriyas HaTorah. So again, you'll be a buck in Kriyas HaTorah. So again, I'm not... You know, I don't want to influence you other ways. So I, there are many other possibilities that we could start. We can start, or we can learn, take a perek in Masechta Sanhedrin if you're interested. Maybe we can take a perek in Masechta Shabbos, or we could take, because again, Sanhedrin and Shabbos are major work, you know, pieces of work. I don't think we'll be able to finish it. Perhaps we can think about Masechta Pesachim. You know, there are two parts to Masechta Pesachim. One part is Kodshim, and the other part is Pesachim. But at least the Pesachim part is Pesachim, you know. And again, there are enormous numbers of possibilities. So I just want to, you know, maybe over Shabbos, if you can, you know, let it gel in your mind. And I'm not going to make any radical decision by Sunday, but think about it. All right, the introduction to the next mission. We're talking about something called a Zav. Now, in many ways, as we'll soon see, a Zav is very similar to a Zava. But yet, in many ways, they're radically different. Okay? For example, a Zava becomes a Zava. I mean, something called Shomer Siyom Kineged Yom, but a real Zava is after three Re'ios. She has to see Dam on three different occasions. And it's got to be during the Yud Alef Yomim, which is called Yomei Aziva. In the case of Zav, of a male, if he has two Re'ios, two emissions, okay, and what the biology of it we can discuss in another occasion, but if he has two, he's already a Zav. Now keep in mind that a Zav is what's called a Tuma Chamura. It's a very high level Tuma. And how do I gauge that? Because there's something called Mishkav and Moshav, which means that if you would set up 10 mattresses, it's like the Princess of the Pea, you remember that? And you put the Zav on top of the top mattress, all the mattresses become Tomei. That's called Mishkav HaZav. Even if he sits on the top mass. So he never had what's called Tumas Mago or Masi, he never had physical contact, nor did he carry anything. It's just that his weight is on it. That's called a Tuma Chamur. Not only that, a Zav needs what's called Zayin Nekiyim. In order to get himself out of Tuma, it's not enough that he goes into the mikvah. When he ceases to see a Re'iyah, he's got to count 7 days consecutively without a Re'iyah. In that sense, it's very parallel to a Zava. And the third element here in Tumazav is what's called a Karvan. It's a double Karvan. It's what's called an Ola and a Chatas. It's Shnei Torim or Shnei Bnei Yona, and he's got to be one as a Chatas and one as an Ola. I never understood exactly why a Zav has to bring a Karvan Chatas. If anybody knows about that, we'll talk about that after the Shia. The Gemara has a whole discussion about why your lettuce has to bring a Karvan Chatas, and we don't understand that Gemara either, but for the case of Zav. Anyway, the Torah says we can't question the Torah. He's got to bring a Karvan Chatas and a Karvan Ola. There are many sugyas and shas about the sequence and what happens if he messes up on the sequence and so forth and so on. So now, I just finished telling you that a Zav has two Re'iyos. Now, two Re'iyos of Ziva could happen on the same day, or it could be 2 days consecutively. It can't be on a Sunday and a Tuesday. That's not Zav. But if they were on Sunday, two Re'iyos, or a Monday, or Sunday and Monday, two consecutive days, he's a Zav. So that's two Re'iyos. What is three Re'iyos? So the Mishnah says, and there's a whole parasha in the Torah about a Zav who saw three Re'iyos. Says the Mishnah, Ein bein zav harosh shtei re'iyos l'rosh shalosh. There is no difference between the two. So why, for God's sake, so why is the whole parsha about three re'iyos in Ziva? Ela karma, which means the following. That a person who has two re'iyos, he's a zav. It means he's either Tuma Chamura with Mishkav and Moshav, the whole 9 yards. It means that he has to count Zayin Nekiyim, but he doesn't have to bring a karma. Who has to bring a karma? That's called a Zav Baal Sholosh Re'iyos. He had three Re'iyos on three consecutive days, or for that matter, three Re'iyos on one day. Then at the end of his Zayin Nekiyim, he goes to Mikvah, and he's mitayer himself, but he has to bring a Karban. If he doesn't bring a Karban, there's an entire Perek in Shas called Mechusrei Kapara in Masechta Kreisos. And basically, such a person is still in a quasi-state of Tumah, if he hasn't brought his korbanos, and he's not allowed to go into the mikdash, he can't eat kodshim, and so forth and so on. So again, the style of the Gemara, as we've seen over and over again, hol inyan mishkavu moshav u'shvira shiva zevzeh shavit. If you tell me that the whole difference between three rios and two rios boils down to the issue of karbon, then apparently, as far as the chumras hatumah, which means that we have a special unique tumah here called mishkavu moshav, that's unique to the case of a zav, that applies even to two rios, and then this unique requirement of shiva nekiyim is also common to both shtei rios and shalosh rios, the only difference being karbon. And now the Gemara embarks on an entire sugi called Minani Mil. How do we know when we compare these two parashios, and they're both written in the same context of Vayikra Tesvav, one has two rios in it, the other has three rios, how do we know that the difference between the two is karma? The Gemara is going to offer all sorts of other types of possibilities, of different logical scenarios. Maybe the difference is that two rios generates tumah, and three rios generates a karbon, but maybe in two rios there's tumah, and in three rios there is no tumah. That's going to be a wild hava. I mean, Bnei Yoshua is going to go crazy over this hava. How could it be that if he had a third riyo, he's no longer tameh, and instead of being tameh, we're going to make him bring a karbon? The Gemara is going to offer another possibility that maybe in the case of shtei riyos, he shouldn't have to require zayin nekiyim because he only had two riyos. But then the Mishnah seems to imply that he does have zayin nekiyim. And notice that the Gemara coins a phrase here called sfiras shiva. Right? Where else in the Torah do you have the word sfira?
Just
on the Omer. It's very interesting. The Omer requires sfira bepet. The question of zav and zava is a fascinating machlokas rishonim. Whether, let's say, for example, a woman counts zayin nekiyim. Today, our women are considered not nidos but zavos. Right? That's what we accepted upon ourselves. A big chumrah that every woman who has a riyas dam, we assume that she's on her way to becoming a zava gadol. Even if we don't know that it's during the yud alef yomim, but that's Rav Chisda's tipas yam kechardol. She has to wait zayin nekiyim. So does a woman every day of her zayin nekiyim have to count out loud? Today is the first day of my zayin nekiyim. We don't know such a thing, but Tosas actually knows of such a thing because the Torah says v'safra lo, and just like usfartem lachem. In the case of the Omer, requires sphere of repair. Tosas raises the possibility that the Sofra law also requires sphere of repair. That would apply to a Zav as well. He also needs Zayin to keep you, even with Turi.
He would require Bracha, too.
Oh, so the Ramban in his Pirush Ala Torah and Parshas Bahar raises the possibility that maybe there should be a Bracha on sphere. So the Ramban comes up with a new category of sphere. He says there are two categories of sphere. There's one category of sphira bepeh, that requires a bracha, and then there's another category of sphira al cheshbon. He calls it shmiras al cheshbon. You know, it's just simply a way of knowing, you know, what day you're up to, so you don't get messed up in the counting. And he says, in that case, there's no sphira bepeh, and certainly there's no bracha. But Tosas does take it seriously, and I saw in some of the poskim that a woman should count sphira out loud. We're not going to allow for the bracha because of the Ramban. So now I'm going to go through the sugya of Minani immediately, but I think we'll leave that for Sunday, B'li Neder. Very complicated sugya. The Gemara has two different limudim, and the Gemara is going to say we need both of them. And, you know, maybe on Sunday we should bring a chumash so we'll be able to see the tzukim inside. I think it'll give us a lot more clarity. And I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great shot.
Right here.
We have, what, chumashim here?
Right up here.
Great, excellent. So we don't have to bring chumashim. It's built in here.